wonder how many of us here have ever been in a canoe. Anybody ever been in a canoe? Well, I'm not here to tell you how much of an expert I am in a canoe. It's just that I have had a few experiences. So I'm going to draw a canoe up here. And I remember the first time that I got in a canoe, and the person that I get in the canoe with, they were very intent. There were several of us getting in canoes and going down the river as young people, and they were very intent on getting to the end destination before anybody else did. Well, it didn't happen that way. We didn't end up being the first one there. And it wasn't because he wasn't energetic. It was because I was very inexperienced. And when we went to get in, he asked me if I had ever been in a canoe. And I told him that I hadn't. And he said, well, one of the things he said is whoever is the heaviest of the two of us needed to sit in the back. And he said the one in the back is the one that is more responsible for the direction of the canoe. And you don't want to put a heavy person in the front and a light person in the back, because the canoe is more susceptible to, you can't direct it very well. It's more susceptible to grounding out and all that. But if you put the heavy person in the back, and as you come up to low places or you need some extra guidance, it just works better that way. So in the process of us, we ended up in the water, in the canoe full of water several times, and ended up, I lost a paddle, and in one of our close encounters with the bank and a overhanging tree, and it was quite an experience. But I'm thinking about the two people in the canoe, and I'd just like to talk about the one in the back this morning, and maybe we'll try to talk about the one in the front this evening. But the one in the back, I would like to give him a name, and this fellow in the back, we're going to call his name Adapt and Overcome. And we find that as you're going down the stream of life, there are many times that there's things that you have to make adjustments for. And the one in the back, being the one most responsible for the guidance or the direction of the canoe, many times they have to compensate for the person in the front. Now, if you have an experienced person and an inexperienced person in a canoe, it's better to put the experienced person in the back. Because if you have an inexperienced person in the front and all they do is paddle on the left side, they don't ever know how to paddle on the right side, the one in the back can kind of compensate for that. They can adapt to it and they can overcome that to a great extent. And if you have someone that's in the back that's inexperienced and all they do is paddle on the left, I'm going to tell you it's really hard for the person in the front to keep it going in the right direction. So this person in the back of the canoe, I want to label them as Mr. Adapt and Overcome. The word adapt means to make suitable, to fit or suit, as to adapt an instrument to its uses. We have provision adapted to our wants. It is applied to things material or immaterial. So adapting is something that is to make suitable or to fit. Years ago, someone told me that there's this one automotive manufacturer in the United States that their engineers were basically there to make adapter plates, because you raise the hood and they might have an engine from one car, another car company, and a transmission from another one. And somebody at that third one had made an adapter plate to put them together. It got to be confusing sometimes. There was some really strange situations that you get into in working on this particular brand of car. And so adapting means to take what you have and making it fit. You want someone that can adapt to different surroundings. If you're going in a place that has limited resources, you're going on a mission trip, you need someone that can adapt. You're going to a third world country and you're going to try to do a construction project, you don't want someone that the only brand of tools they can use is DeWalt or Ridgid, or you want somebody that can use a handsaw as well as a power tool, you see. So the word overcome means to conquer, to vanquish, to subdue, as to overcome enemies in a battle. It means to surmount, to get the better of, is overcome difficulties or obstacles. And then we put these two words together in our vocabulary and we say adapt and overcome. And we use that phrase to mean something like we need to be flexible and be able to adjust and not fall prey to defeat. And many times we find so many things coming to us in life, and it's like that first canoe ride that you went down that fast-moving stream, and I know that first one I went on was not like a farm pond. It was not still water. From the time we had to hold on to the canoe, and when we got in, it just took off with us. And the paddling we done was to direct the thing, not to keep it moving, because the stream was moving so fast. And that was a bad canoe ride for me to learn on, because it was just one catastrophe after another one. And many times life feels that way. It feels like the current of life is going so fast, we're going over rapids and we're going around curves, and there's overhanging trees and there's rocks protruding out of the river, and it's just a menagerie of how do I adapt and overcome in all of these situations. There's nothing like going along in a canoe and coming to a rapids place and the canoe going out about halfway over and kind of sticking, and then the person in the front is hanging over the edge, and then all of a sudden it tips over, and of course the front of the canoe goes under the water, and then you got a boat full of water and you're trying to figure out how to get it to shallow water where you can get the water dumped out of it. But if you're able to adapt and foresee, there's something coming up here. We've got to get enough speed, and you just go along and you kind of skim over that, and the canoe just drops down on the water like that, and you keep going. That can be pretty exhilarating. You overcome that thing, you see. You adapted to the thing. And narrowly missing, life is that way. You miss so many obstacles by adapting. Are we going to? I hope you get the illustration this morning. It seems to me the more adept we are at adapting and overcoming, the more satisfactory life is. The word adept means the more capable we are, the more willing we are. So the more adept we are at adapting and overcoming, the more contentment we have in life, because we're all going to have to adapt. We're going to have to overcome. There's obstacles that come our way that cause us to feel like disaster is looming. Sometimes you come up, if you're going down a river in a canoe and you come up and you can tell that there is a little waterfall or there's a drop ahead of you, and you hear a roar. I wouldn't advise you to go skimming over that one and expect to drop down. It's time to maybe pull over to the bank and either go up and see how far the fall is, or maybe to pick it up and carry it around that waterfall and go down and put it back in the water. You know, it could be life-threatening to go over the brink of something like that. But if it's just a little 2-foot drop, you could probably skim over that one, you see. But you have to learn to adapt and overcome in all of these situations. My message this morning is about the things that come against us in our temporal, our emotional, and our spiritual realm of life. So I'd like for us to turn to 2 Kings, and I'd like for us to notice a passage of Scripture. I believe that the Lord wants us to be able to adapt and overcome. And I believe He's there to help us and give us wisdom and give us direction. And I'd like for us to begin reading in verse 8 of chapter 6 of 2 Kings. And notice what the writer says here. I got to get in 2 Kings. I'm in 1 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 6, beginning in verse 8. It says, "Then the king of Syria warred against Israel and took counsel with his servants, saying, 'In such and such a place shall be my camp.' And the man of God sent unto the king of Israel, saying, 'Beware that thou pass not such a place, for thither the Syrians are come down.' And the king of Israel sent to the place which the man of God told him and warned him of, and saved himself there not once nor twice." So it was more than one time that the Syrians decided, well, here's where we're going to ambush the Israelites. And maybe he told his men, "Now, fellas, we're going to prepare and we're going to go down. I know the Israelites are going to be going this way. That this is how they go to get their food or their water, or this is their means of escape, and we're going to ambush them over there." And every time that he made a plan, or the Israelites were there to get him. They were there before he got there. So it says here, "Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled for this thing, and he called his servants and said unto them, 'Will you not shew me which of us is for the king of Israel?'" Now, which one of you are telling our secrets? Who's on the enemy's side here? This is the Syrian king. And one of the servants said, "None, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet that is in Israel, telleth the king of Israel the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber." Your most private thoughts are being shared. There's a prophet down there, and he's telling the king what you're thinking of. And the king is adapting to whatever your tricks are. The Lord wants to speak to us and give us wisdom and direction about how to adapt to the tactics of the enemy. See, the Syrians were coming to make war with them. It said in the 8th verse, the king of Syria warred against Israel. He wanted to overthrow them. He wasn't just out playing games. He wanted to destroy their power, their effectiveness. He wanted to overrule them. He wanted them to be in subjection to him, the Syrian king. But every attempt he made, the Israelites were prepared for him. Or they just, have you ever tried to ambush somebody and scare them? And you ended up waiting and waiting and waiting, and they never came that way? My dad could do that. Oh, it was like, I would think I was going to hide behind the door or something and jump out and scare my dad. And it was like, I got tired of waiting. I just knew he was going to come through the hallway. I just knew he was going to come that way. And it seemed like he knew where I was at. And he would just stall out until I got tired of waiting on him and I'd have to come out of my hiding place. You know, and it doesn't matter if the king of Israel was prepared there and ambushed the Syrians, or if the Lord revealed it to him and the king of Israel just didn't go there. Can you imagine the enemy getting... They knew the Israelites was going to go down this path, or they thought they did. And they got all set up and they're ready for them. Y'all don't make any noise. Here, the Israelites are going to be coming. Hours go by. All day, nothing happens. They get restless. The Syrian king begins to look like he's not a good leader, you see? And he pulls everybody together and he said, "Who is it that's telling this?" Well, it was the God of Israel that was telling Elisha, and he was telling the king. He was helping the king to adapt. He said here, and he said, "Go and spy where he is, that I may send and fetch him." And it was told him, saying, "Behold, he's in Dothan." Therefore sent he hither horses and chariots and a great host for one man. Okay? And they came by night and compassed the city about. Now, I believe that the Lord revealed that to Elisha. But anyway, here comes this big host encamped about the city. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, an host had compassed the city, both with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, "Alas, my master, how shall we do? Now what are we going to do?" I venture to say that this was the same servant, most likely, that had been taking the messages to the king of Israel. The Syrian king is going down to this location. Be prepared. And now they realize the Syrian king has wised up to where the information leak is at. And now they come and encamp about the city. And the servant goes out. I can just see him going out in the morning, and that's the Syrian army all around us. And he goes back in and he says, "Master," he says, "what are we going to do? Here's something we weren't expecting. The enemy was out there somewheres. We've been telling the king and the king's being prepared and all of that. And now it's in our door. It's at our doorstep. What are we going to do?" You have to adapt to that, you know. There are times that we feel like, well, persecution is out there somewheres. It's not close to the home. It's not in our neighborhood. You know, all the violence, that it just happens in the big metro areas. It don't happen in the rural areas. But we found out different. Just recently, there was an act of violence that happened. I live out in the country, and it happened a mile and a half from the house. Terrible circumstance. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to have to adapt to that. So the servant came back in and he said, what's our plan now? This wasn't something we seen on the... I didn't see this on the horizon. Y'all remember how that happened, don't you? The Lord inspired Elisha to tell him to open his eyes. He said, "There's more with us than there is with them." The Lord's going to help us. You know, the Lord's going to help you to adapt whatever your circumstances are. And you know, as your little boat, your little canoe is going down the current of life, and you see something looming ahead, and it looks like that your little boat is going to be wrecked. It looks like you're going to be sucked under. It looks like you're going to be capsized. It looks like surely you won't survive this. The Lord is going to have... There's more with us than with them. He's going to help us adapt. He's going to teach us what to do. So Elisha said, "There's more with us. Open your eyes and look around." So let's go on down a little bit to the 18th verse. So they didn't just stay outside the city. They came down to where they were at. And when they came down to him, Elisha prayed unto the Lord and said, "Smite this people, I pray thee, with blindness." And he smote them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. He adapted. And Elisha said unto them, "This is not the way, neither is this the city. Follow me, and I'll bring you to the man whom you seek." Oh, you think of the courage and the boldness that old Elisha had here. He was adapting to his circumstances. He was adapting to what life dealt him. And he took these people, and it came to pass in the 20th verse, when they were came unto Samaria, that Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men, and that they may see." And the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. They took him right in. He took them right into the capital city. And the king of Israel said unto Elisha, when he saw them, "My father, shall I smite them? Shall I smite them? Lord, Elisha, this looks like the golden opportunity. We got them inside the city gates. They're at a disadvantage. They just got their sight restored. And can you imagine somebody going from blindness to being able to see? All of a sudden, it's kind of like somebody coming in your bedroom and flipping the light on and hollering, 'Wake up!'" And you're kind of rubbing your eyes, and the king of Samaria says, "Shall we just kill them all? Shall we just get rid of them? They've been an awful trouble to us, and we're having to adapt to all of their tactics and all of that." But the Lord showed mercy even to the Samaritans. You know, as we adapt to our hurts and our misfortunes and our circumstances, there's going to be times that we're going to wish we could just rub it all out and get rid of it. But many times the Lord will show mercy to the very ones that are persecuting us and causing us trouble. And he answered, "Thou shalt not smite them. Wouldest thou smite those whom thou hast taken captive with thy sword and with thy bows? Set bread and water before them that they may eat and drink and go to their master." And he prepared great provisions for them. And when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away, and they went to their master. So the bands of Syria came no more unto the land of Israel. Now, isn't that the end result that we want? Isn't that the victory? Isn't that overcoming? You see all the adapting that went on there? Maybe I hope you can get the illustration this morning. And I think sometimes we begin to be overwhelmed by the attacks and the techniques and the procedures that the forces of the enemy, seems like the enemy is using this person or that person or circumstances in life or playing with my emotions, and it looks like he's going to defeat me. But I'm going to tell you, the Lord is there, going to help us, just like he helped Elisha, just like he helped the king of Israel. And he'll be there for us to adapt to the confrontations that the enemy is bringing in our life. I'd like for us to turn to a scripture in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter. And we're going to find here that Paul had to do some adapting in his life, and there were things that he had to confront. We know some things about Paul's life, but we're going to read one couple verses here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning in verse 24. He says, "Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that you may obtain." You know, whether we consider ourselves running in a race or going down the river of life, we are to be focused to getting to the end and crossing the finish line in victory. He says here, "And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they which do it to obtain a corruptible crown, now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible." There are success stories out in this world. There are success stories in finances. There are success stories in physical abilities. There are success stories in mental abilities and all of this other kind. But we're doing this for eternal reward and eternal benefits. He says here, "If I therefore so run, not as uncertainty, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air." And the verse I want us to really get a hold of is, "But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." It's so easy for us to say, well, here's the way you keep the canoe going straight. You paddle three times on the left side, and then you paddle three times on the right side, or whichever way it is. You just paddle equal amounts, and when you're going around a corner, then you want to paddle this way. And here's how you do it. And here's the procedures. Here's how you do it without splashing water. We could give you all of that. But when it comes out there and you're the one that's doing the paddle, there are things that you're going to have to adapt to. There's things that are surprises as you're going down and facing the current and facing the things that could distract you. And Paul says, I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Keeping under our body is something that we all have to do. And I would like to consider our body as fleshly manifestations. And this term, I'd like for us to kind of develop a little bit. We are to adapt and overcome fleshly manifestations, our body, keeping under our body, whatever they might be. All right? They come in, fleshly manifestations come in different packages. Sometimes they come in affliction, blindness, lameness, speech impediments. Maybe you don't feel like you can grasp new information or remember information like you should, and you feel handicapped. And you know, one of the fleshly manifestations of that can be you can lash out at those that seem to have things going their way. You can begin to criticize, and well, you don't know what it's like to be lame, or you don't know what it's like to be without this benefit or that benefit. And this flesh can start, but we're going to have to adapt to that and overcome that. And you know, we can also have fleshly manifestations in things like physical prowess, abilities, in beauty. And we begin to feel that, well, I got it coming to me. But that's a fleshly manifestation. We're going to have to adapt to that. We're going to have to overcome that. We're going to have to put that part of our flesh, our body, into subjection and keep on course. We have things that face us in our temporal existence. Maybe sometimes it's direct and sometimes it's indirect. Sometimes it seems like it's coming around from a long distance around. They can be the result of unprecedented success. It may seem like that everything we touch just falls into place. Everything we touch turns into profit. It could be that. I'm going to tell you, you're going to have to put that, the feeling of self-worth and all, you're going to have to put that. You're going to have to adapt that. Put that part of flesh into subjection. And if it seems like everything we attempt to do blows up in our face, and there's failure here and failure there, and disappointments in this, and I try this job and that procedure, and nothing seems to work. There can be irritations and things that develop, and we're going to have to put that into subjection too. We're going to have to adapt to those things. We're going to have to overcome those things. It doesn't matter if it's our talents and maybe our physical strength. It doesn't matter if it's beauty. If it doesn't matter, everybody might tell us, if every person that we meet comes in contact with us, if they tell us how attractive we are, how beautiful our eyes are, our hair, or whatever it is, we're going to have something to deal with. it's going to be something that's going to be real easy to become elevated in and think, oh, looky here. Look at my eyes, or look at my hair, or look at this, or whatever. We're going to have to adapt and overcome. We're going to trying to keep our boat going straight down the river. We're trying to get to the end destination. It could be the same thing on the other end of the spectrum. People could tell us every time they see us, maybe they turn to their friends and they say, oh my, poor child, or poor man, or poor woman. Because they feel like we're so unattractive. You know, we're going to have to adapt and overcome to that too. It doesn't matter if it's our ability to do or to not to do. We are constantly adapting, overcoming those things that would cause us to sink, that would tear a hole in our boat, that would cause us to be capsized. We're constantly doing that. And that person in the back, there is a big responsibility on them directing that little canoe. And life is so full of adapting and overcoming. We can have emotional rejection, and we can have emotional euphoria. And I'm going to tell you, either one of those will capsize our boat. If we leave those things unchecked, our flesh, our body not brought into subjection, the fleshly manifestation of emotional euphoria will cause you to be unstable. And the fleshly manifestation of emotional rejection and feeling of failure will capsize your boat too. And we're going to have to put those things into subject. We're going to have to adapt. How do we compensate? How do we adapt for these things? How do we keep on course? How do we avoid the dangerous pitfalls? Paul says, I keep under my body, lest when I have preached to others, I myself would be a castaway. You know, that's something I have to contend with. You know, it's one thing to share a message you feel like the Lord give you, and somebody come along and say, oh, Brother Danny, I really appreciate that. That was, you hit the nail on the head. That was good. And then the next time somebody come along and says, you ever thought about this? You realize how that come across? You got to have both. There's both of them that's out there, let me tell you. I'm telling you from experience. And I'm going to tell you, if we don't keep our adapting and overcoming, either one of them will spin us out of control. Either one, if you're financially successful, or if you're a financial disaster, either one of them will destroy our spirit. If we allow it, we've got to adapt to that. We've got to overcome it. We can't allow those things to deter us from making heaven our home. We got to listen to the Lord. Where's the enemy coming from? Help me to be prepared. I would like to ambush the enemy every time. I'd like to avoid him every time, but I'm going to have to listen to the Lord. I believe He's willing to help me. And when the enemy comes all the way to my front door, Lord, help me to have the courage to say, Lord, would you put some blindness on this thing? Would you help me lead him into another place? Would you help me to have the courage? Because we're going to face these things. We're going to face these things where it looks like we're done. Two men, a prophet and his servant against the whole army of the Syrians. What are you going to do in a situation like that? You know, blindness disables most anything. You go down the road, and one of the most alarming things that could ever happen to you, and I've drove vehicles that this happened. You're going down the road and just minding your own business, and you're going at highway speeds, and maybe it's a cloudy, overcast day, and all of a sudden, in the dark, maybe you're going home from work after dark or something, and you're driving down the road, and all of a sudden the headlights go out. That can be very distressful. I'm telling you, you're going to start fiddling with the switch and messing with the dimmer and see if you can come get those things to come back on. Many times we're going down the road in life, down the stream of life, and something happens. Something causes us to feel very distressed. Lord, how do I adapt to this? How do I overcome this? I don't want to make a shipwreck. I don't want to give up. You know, spiritually we can feel like we're fixing to wreck too. You know that Job came to a place that he felt neglected by God. He looked around and he said, I looked on this side and he wasn't there, and I looked on that side and I looked over there and I looked behind. I couldn't see God anywhere. His wife even told him, why don't you curse God and die? You know, spiritually he felt pretty wrecked to rock bottom, didn't he? But you know how he adapted to that? How he overcome that? He said, though he slay me, yet will I serve him. That's how he adapted. And when he said, I escaped by the skin of my teeth. That was adapting. He was adapting to his difficult circumstances. And he come out in the end. Oh, I like reading that last chapter of Job, don't you? I like to reading it down there where it says that his end was better than his beginning. You know, our end can be better than our beginning. We can go into something, events of life, circumstances of life, and we say, I don't see how anything of good can come out of this. It's negative any way you look at it. I can't see the Lord over here. I can't see Him over there. He's nowhere to be found. How can this be good for me? If you haven't ever said that, you probably felt it. How can this be good for me? Job felt it. But in the end, the Scripture records it as his end was better than his beginning. There's an old adage that we ought to take with us today. And we've all heard it, I'm sure. When life gives you lemons, what are you supposed to do? Make lemonade. That's adapting, isn't it? You know, can you imagine the reaction of the first person that tasted a lemon or a lime? If I was out in the woods somewhere and I pulled a fruit off of a tree and I tasted it and it tasted like a lemon, I'd probably throw that thing and say, that's poison. That's terrible. But somewhere along the line, somebody realized that if you add something to that, it could be made into something that was delicious. Most everybody here likes a little chocolate from now and then. But I'm going to tell you, get you a teaspoon of chocolate that hasn't had some sugar put with it, and you try to swallow a teaspoon of chocolate, cocoa powder. I'm going to tell you, that stuff is bitter. I remember getting into my mama's chocolate cocoa. I thought, well, this is how you make hot chocolate. And I took a big teaspoon of that stuff and put it in my mouth. And I'm going to tell you, I couldn't get it out of there quick enough. But it takes some adaption. We've got to adapt, see? When you put a little stuff in it that makes it sweet, it becomes very palatable and you like the flavor. You know the grace of God will help us have sweetness? And make something delicious out of things that are sour and bitter that comes our way? May the Lord help us today to be able to adapt. Think of yourself as you're going down life. Think of yourself in the back of the canoe and realizing there's something ahead that could turn me over. There's something looming in my path. And sometimes you're going down, if you're going down a little creek or a little river, and it can be real peaceful with the woods around you. And maybe you're going along and all of a sudden you start hearing a roar of some sort. And if you come around the curve of the river and you see a mist coming up and that roar gets louder, you know there's a waterfall. And you can tell if there's a mist coming up, this is a pretty substantial thing. But I'm going to tell you, you better stop and get out and look before you go over that one. The Lord will help us adapt. I believe that. He's helped me. He helped Elisha. He helped Paul to be able to put his flesh under. And he'll help me today. And he'll help you. You pray for me.